Integrity is doing a job without being supervised. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. Integrity is doing a job without being supervised. How many of us are able to do a job without being supervised? How many of us are able to be given a responsibility and we carry it through from the beginning to the end without having someone check on what we're doing and someone have to make sure that we understand what the job is and how it's to be done? Very few people can do that, because we have to be told what the job is, how it's to be done. Now, we have a handyman, Brian, and we oftentimes tell him of something that needs to be done, and what happens? He goes out and he does it to the best of his understanding. And sometimes it's far better than we had thought of doing it. And sometimes it leaves a little bit to be desired because we hadn't been clear as to how completely we want the job done. But he does a good job. He has integrity. Oh. Was your father a person with integrity? And your father probably had very little integrity. You say, well, you don't know my dad. Well, your father had very, very little integrity. Did your father spend quality time with the children at least two or three times a week, maybe more, but at least two or three times a week? And the answer is no. No. Most fathers do not spend quality time with their children. They come home and they grumble and they jump in their chair and they eat dinner and argue with the kids and shout at them or they spank them and they punish them according to what mama says they have done during the day. And there's no happy relationship between father and children. I know my own father was that same way. Maybe I'm speaking too much from experience. But he just did his thing, and we had very little contact with him. In fact, I knew very little about my father. He was there, but he was not there for us. He was just there and relaxing after a hard day's work, or maybe his work continued as he figured plans for the evening on construction jobs that he was doing. And he was just there. And he was not a bad man. He just did not take the responsibility of taking part in giving quality time to his children so that they could develop the ethics and values and so forth that the family was known for. Mother had to take those responsibilities, and she did it very well. But integrity is doing a job without being supervised. Now, did God supervise my father to do the job of being a good father with quality time with the children? Well, I guess God was kind of busy. Because my dad had no desire to do any of the things that were expected of him that way. But he's a good fellow. And from what I could tell, all the neighbor children, their fathers were much the same way. Oh, there were a few whose fathers spent a lot of time with the children, and they had a lot of good times. They learned how to play ball with their dad. They learned how to shoot baskets. They learned how to work in the workshop. They learned how to do a lot of things. And this is great. But now, integrity is doing a job without being supervised. What other area could we do a job without being supervised? when we go to college, do we go to college and do we study and make good grades and do our best so that we can take that knowledge that we gain in college and use it when we get out? Or do we play games in college? Are we playboys and girls and not giving our responsibility or integrity to the job of going to college? Oh, there was one young man. He was quite interesting. I'll tell you the story. His name is Bill. He had wild hair. Wore a t-shirt with holes in it, blue jeans, and no shoes. In the entire time that I knew him, I never once saw Bill wear a pair of shoes. Rain, sleet, or snow, Bill was barefoot. This was literally his wardrobe for his whole 4 years in college. Interesting, huh? He was brilliant, and he looked like he was always pondering the esoteric. He became a Christian while attending college. Across the street from the campus was a church full of well-dressed middle-class people. They wanted to develop a ministry for the college students, but they were not sure how to go about it. One day, Bill decided to worship there. He walked into the church, complete with his wild hair, t-shirt, blue jeans, and bare feet. The church was completely packed, and the service had already begun. Bill started down the aisle to find a place to sit. But by now, the people were looking a little bit uncomfortable at him. But no one said anything. As Bill moved closer and closer to the pulpit, he realized there were no empty seats. So he squatted down and sat on the carpet right in front of the altar itself. Although such behavior would have been perfectly acceptable at the college fellowship, this was a scenario that this particular congregation had never witnessed before. By now, the people seemed uptight, and the tension in the air was thickening. Right about the time that Bill took his seat, a deacon slowly began to make his way down the aisle from the back of the sanctuary. The deacon was in his 80s, his silver-gray hair, a three-piece suit, and a pocket watch. He was a godly man, very elegant, dignified, and courtly. He walked with a cane, and as he neared the boy, church members thought, "You can't blame him for what he's going to do. How can you expect a man of his years and background to understand some college kid on the floor?" It took a time for the man to reach the boy. The church was utterly silent except for the clicking of his cane. You couldn't even hear anyone breathing. All eyes were on the deacon. But then they saw the elderly man drop his cane on the floor. With great difficulty, he sat down on the floor next to Bill and worshipped with him. Everyone in the congregation choked up with emotion. When the minister gained control, he told the people, "What I am about to preach, you'll never remember. What you have seen, you will never forget." Now, Bill was a perfect indication, a perfect illustration of integrity. He did what he believed in doing. He did what he felt was right for him to do, and he didn't need any supervision about it. He didn't have fancy clothes, and he didn't have shoes at all. It was his pleasure. He probably was a very casual person in all respects. He had wild, unruly hair, and he had many other avenues of his being that showed a certain amount of lack of care about his personal self. But what he had integrity about was his learning, and he was a brilliant student. What he had integrity about was when he went to church to participate in being a Christian, and there was no place to sit, he sat on the floor. He was going to be there. He didn't think anything strange about it. The only thing is, other people think things are strange about that because it's not in keeping with what they would do. They wouldn't have the courage, the gall, the guts to sit on the floor in the middle of a church service. They would think, no, this would bring them bad report from all the rest of the congregants, and of course it would. And in this instance, it had brought an uptightness, you know, and sadness to the people who thought, "Oh, that poor boy, what is he doing here?" In other words, what's that beggar doing in here? That's probably what they thought, you know. What's that good-for-nothing, dirty, frivolous person doing in here? And not stopping to think at all, he came there to worship. He came there to exercise what his job was. His job was to worship. And so he sat down and worshiped. Now the old fellow who saw him, he realized that there was no place for him to sit. There was no place for him to find a place to seat. And so naturally he sat on the floor. And the old man recognized that the congregation was all shook up over this. And he realized that if he did something, it would be acceptable. So he sat down with the young man. To make the young man feel better? No, the young man didn't care. He had no feelings that he didn't even sense the congregation's unhappiness. He was there to worship to God. He was there to worship to Jesus. He was there to do his church worship. He had no concern what was going on around him. What a master. What a master. He was pure integrity. Could we be so integral as that? Could we be so one-pointed as that? That when we had to face a circumstance where people all around us are having difficulty and things are going pretty badly and we are untouched by it, can we do that? Can we do that in every respect of our life? Now, I know I argue with all of you here on campus to keep your nose out of other people's business, I argue with you to be in charge of your own life and not to be concerned about others. And I argue with you that when others tell you to do something and it's not their job to do it, you just ignore it. I argue with you that you do not be touched by what other people say or do. We told the story of the guru. You have a copy of that there? what was he doing? Oh, yes. It was a very famous old warrior. And he was in a community in India, I'm sure. And he was a Zen master. And he was quite competent in the field of his activity. But this is how the story goes here. There we are. The Gift of Insults, it's called. Ho, ho, ho. What kind of integrity do we have doing a job without being supervised? Well, here's what this warrior did. There once lived a great warrior, though quite old. He was still able to defeat any challenger. His reputation extended far and wide throughout the land, and many students gathered to study under him. One day, an infamous young warrior arrived at the village. He was determined to be the first man to defeat the great master. Along with his strength, he had the uncanny ability to spot and exploit any weakness in his opponent. He would wait for his opponent to make the first move, thus revealing a weakness, and then would strike with merciless force and lightning speed. No one had ever lasted with him in a match beyond the first move. Much against the advice of his concerned students, the old master gladly accepted the young warrior's challenge. As the two squared off for battle, the young warrior began to hurl insults at the old master. He threw dirt and spit in his face. For hours, he verbally assaulted him with every curse and insult known to mankind. But the old warrior merely stood there, motionless and calm. Finally, the young warrior exhausted himself. Knowing he was defeated, he left feeling ashamed. Somewhat disappointed that he did not fight the insolent youth, the students gathered around the old master and questioned him. How could you endure such an indignity? How did you drive him away? And the master said, if someone comes to you to give you a gift and you do not receive it, to whom does the gift belong? The warrior, who had been so dominant and so violent and so powerful, trying to influence the master, made one mistake. He probably wouldn't have won with being using a sword either, but he made one mistake. He just stood there and insulted the man and threw gifts at him, threw barrages of garbage at him, and the master just stood there waiting for him to make his move. And he did not hear those things. If the master heard it at all, he would have responded to it in some way. But he didn't hear it at all. He was blind to it. He was dumb to it. He was deaf to it. He knew that his opponent was trying to get to him. But how he was trying to get to him, he did not concern himself in the slightest. He remained impassive. He remained untouched. He remained non-possessed by it. He remained non-judgmental. He remained one-pointed in every way. He had his sword at hand, and it was able to do a tremendous thing if he chose to, because he was a swordsman. He was a master. That doesn't mean that he was not a fighter. He loved the fight. That was his whole life. He was a warrior. That's what they called him. There once lived a great warrior. See, these Zen stories are quite charming and quite meaningful, and they tell us quite a story about ourselves. Could I say to any of you, could you stand up to that sort of a thing? Oh, yes, I could stand up to that because I know what's going on. Come on now. The students didn't know what was going on. The students were training under this master and were very adept, very sharp, and they had no idea what was going on because, here's what they said. somewhat disappointed that he did not fight the insolent youth. The students gathered around the old master and said, "How could you endure such an indignity? How did you drive him away?" Well, the master didn't endure the indignity. He did not endure the indignity. He didn't hear the indignity. He didn't even know it was taking place. He had no idea. Well, how do you turn off your thought? How do you turn off your listening power? My dears, you are a bunch of idiots. You sit here at this table with me night after night, and occasionally your mind drifts off to some other land, and I have lost you. You are not in my awareness. You are not in this room. You are off somewhere else. And here, I'm not insulting you, I don't think. I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm just sharing with you the philosophy. And it is so uninteresting, your mind drifts away. It drifts away. Each of you. Without exception. Each of you. If you can drift away like that, why not the great warrior? Let his mind be on other things. Be on readiness with his sword. His sword is nicely sharpened. His sword is being held in his hand. He is watching the other man in preparation for his move. He does not hear a rustle. He does not hear a word coming from the other man. He only hears his own heartbeat. He only hears his own preparation. You do it too. But you don't do it when it counts. You don't stop listening when someone irritates you. You stop listening when someone is trying to share it with you, something beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Ingeborg sits here and eats her meals with such intent. She has no idea there's anybody else at the table. No idea. She has no idea that we're talking. And she oftentimes says, "Well, you don't involve me in your conversation." Well, we don't involve her in our conversation because she's not with us. When she's with her meal, she's 100% with her meal. Well, bully, bully. That's very great. That's a great talent to have. Timely to use it when it is called for. But when you're having dinner at the... Why do we eat together? Why do we eat together? We eat together to share. We eat together to talk together, to share what the day is and what our feelings are, and to share what this organization is all about, to share what our thoughts are of the monastery, of the university of healing here, of who we are. And you see, the only person who is shut out of the conversation is a person who's not listening, who's not entering into it. And that includes all of you. All of you enter into the conversations we have at the table here only to the degree that it interests you and that you can bring up something that interests you. And that's okay. That's okay. That's called human conversation. Divine conversation is where you see about listening and caring. Now, I want to say this to each of you. I am going to trade each of you in for one Susan. For one Susan. Susan will come into a room and she will see the people and she will go to each person and give them 100% eye contact, 100% ear contact, 100% attention. Now that is rare. That is rare in the human race, to actually listen to somebody else when they're talking and actually show concern and actually speak about what they have said, not what's in your mind that you would like to say, but what they're talking about. Now, Susan is a most amazing girl, and there are Susans in this world, and our Susan lives right over in Pine Valley, and she is just a wonderful, beautiful being, one we could emulate so perfectly. She has the integrity of doing a job without being supervised. She doesn't have to have everybody watching and see, are you paying attention to him? Are you watching him with all your mind and all your heart and all your soul? She doesn't need that. She does it because that is her nature. That is her training. Now, can we train ourselves to be so one-pointed? If someone comes and throws insults at us, what do we do? Do we concentrate on the insults? Or do we think of something nice to say to the person? Agree with your adversary quickly. Now, what in the world does that mean? That means that you get have integrity for doing a job without being supervised. Because you're agreeing with your adversary. That doesn't mean you are allowing your adversary's comments to be put into practice. That merely means you agree with it. Someone says, oh, I think that this whole organization is a lousy organization. The University of Healing, my goodness sakes, it's terrible. And I would say to them, hey, I never heard anyone say that. What seems to be something that you feel is not beneficial about the university? Right away, they're caught for words because they were trying to irritate us. They were trying to insult us. They were trying to make us unhappy. And because we didn't accept it, they weren't ready to say what they had to say about being against us, because they really weren't against us. They were just trying to be irritable. And we didn't accept it. Someone says, oh, you have a terrible looking dress on. And you say, oh, really? I picked it out just special for today, but mainly I picked it out because I knew you were going to be here today, and I wanted it to look nice for you. What seems to be the problem with it? You see, we're the masters. We're the masters in every way. And if we're going to allow ourselves to fail to be the master, then I say, put a sword in your heart right now. Cut out. If you're not going to play the game here of being a divine human being, die. Die dead. I don't even want to go to your funeral. Because you have no interest in doing anything that is beneficial to you. You only want to be argumentative, and you only want to be an irritant. You are a gift I will not accept. I will only accept gifts of love, harmony, peace, joy, truth, honor, wisdom, and goodness. And this is what I expect from all of you. And whenever you don't give me those gifts, and you give me a gift that you think is going to irritate me, I don't even hear you. And I don't even care. My job is to be myself and have fun. My job is to work with you, guiding you to be yourself and have fun. And if you're being yourself and having fun is throwing brickbats at other people, then I'm not on your team at all. And you're certainly not on my team. But if you are a loving, gentle, kind, wonderful being, if your integrity is doing a job without being supervised, being yourself and having fun, being blind and deaf to anything other than that, that's great. I wrote a letter to a lady. Bring that pile of letters in here. These. And this lady is in Australia, and she attended our seminar, at the Theosophical Society in Sydney, Australia. And I spoke for several hours there, giving them a beautiful rendition of our philosophy and covering many wonderful things. And then there was a discussion afterwards, and that went on quite nicely. We took a video of it, I believe, too. And it was just really quite nice. And she wrote such a lovely letter that she said it was so beautiful being here and being there at the meeting, and that she wasn't sure what she was going to hear, but she found out that it was her philosophy too. And so I wrote to her, "Beloved Joan, well now, how about that? You have lived 82 years and only met me once. I am the poorer for it. You are indeed an amazing woman, and the only people I remember from the Theosophical Society meeting in Sydney were advanced souls who lived in master consciousness awareness. You certainly do keep good company. It is always harmonious when we meet others who have tastes as our own and who think on the level of our own illumination. I travel the world and meet many marvelous beings. I am unable to say that I am a practical person, since I only meet people like myself. Any missive you choose to write will be read with great joy. I read your letter to my staff, and they want to put part of it, or all of it, in the gist. How about that? You are famous on all fronts. This is the thing that happens to amazing people. I love you." Now, why did she write that letter? She's 82 years old. She's been on top of everything all her life, and she's a fantastic lady. But she wrote the letter. Let's see what else we got here. She wrote the letter because she wanted to say thank you, and she wanted to say good stuff to us, you know. And that's beautiful. So that's part of what the world is all about, isn't it? Being beautiful and doing fantastic things. And that's part of what you're all about, being beautiful and doing fantastic things. Integrity is doing a job without being supervised. And living in the absolute philosopher's consciousness is having integrity and doing a job without being supervised, keeping your mind clear, crisp, sharp, aware of your divinity, and staying there under all circumstances. Well, here we are again. It's time to say, I love you, I love you, I love you.